Blog Talk Radio.
Listen to your baby. Do you know what he's saying? He's saying thank you for taking good care of him before he got here. Women who lead healthy lifestyles, eat well, monitor their health, and get prenatal care better their odds against infant mortality. Call 1-800-444-6472 and learn what you can do to ensure your baby's health. Your baby will thank you. This is Tanya Lewis Lee, author and producer, asking you to step up to help end infant mortality. A healthy baby begins with you.
Good evening and welcome to this special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I know it's not Saturday morning, it's Wednesday evening, and we're here, excuse me, little thing caught my throat. We're here with some special guests, talking about a very important issue that affects African-American women and families, I should say, not just women, because men are involved in the process also, but the issue of infant mortality. African-Americans have 1.8 times the sudden infant death syndrome mortality rate as non-Hispanic whites in 2005, according to the Office of Minority Health. African-American mothers were 2.5 times more likely than non-Hispanic white mothers to begin prenatal care in the third trimester or not receive prenatal care at all. The infant mortality rate for African-American mothers is over 13 years of education. With over 13 years of education, was almost three times that of non-Hispanic white mothers in 2005. We have a lot of serious implications of what that means, and I have some special guests here to talk about that and what we as a people and a community can do to help eliminate some of these issues. Dr. Science is an Assistant Dean of Diversity and Cultural Affairs at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. She is a founding member and former president of the National Association of Hispanic Nurses. She served as a member of the Secretary of Health and Human Services Advisory Committee on Infant Mortality during the Clinton and Bush administrations. As a funded infant researcher focused on the growth and development of minority infants and expert member of SICAM, she consulted on the development of the national campaign to close the gap on infant mortality, a health disparity that especially affects the African American community. Good evening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening.
I also have a student with her, Stephanie Chu. She's a senior at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. There, she's an active member of the Minorities in Nursing Organization. And Stephanie also is working on a Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign, which is part of the Office of Minority Health, one of their initiatives. She's been working on that campaign since 2008. And she is a preconception peer educator. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that means and how you can become a preconception peer educator to help combat this serious issue. So I just want to say again, thank you so much for joining the call this evening, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
So now, why do we think this is? Why is this happening more with African-American mothers? I'll direct this question to the doctor first. In your research, what have you found? What are some of the leading causes of why this is so?
It really starts with the social determinants of health and how that has created undue health disparities in the African-American population. And when I talk about that, I talk about there's high levels of poverty, low levels of education, and limited economic opportunity, and all of these together provide a profile of high-level stress that really does have profound impact on the healthy outcomes of babies.
Well, I met you at the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing. You were doing a screening of Tanya Lewis Lee, that's Spike Lee's wife, her film Crisis in the Crib, and one of the interesting things that the movie brought up was the issue that there are women who do make enough money, who are not in a state of poverty, but they deal with high levels of stress. And you just mentioned several times the issue of stress. What are some of the things that stress affects in a person's life?
Well, it actually has a physiological response in the body, which increases the level of a biochemical called cortisol in the body. And that does all kinds of has all kinds of implications to human beings' immune system and cardiovascular system, and both will be negatively affected over time if the stress continues over time without any chance of eliminating it. The body just sort of starts to break down under that amount of stress that's ongoing.
And on a consistent basis, yeah.
Right, and one profound source of stress that has been identified in African-American women, and this was identified by the former chair of the Secretary's Advisory Committee, Dr. James Smith, who is he's a neonatologist at the University of Chicago, and he did a study and found an association among African-American women between racism and preterm birth. And they also found that with the racism that was experienced by the mothers through their pregnancy, as measured by increased levels of cortisol, they saw an increase in the level of preterm birth among the women. And this is long-term stress. It's not something that's quick that happens, but it's something that's an ongoing thing that the human body experiences, and they can't end it. And so, again, it starts to affect you internally. It affects everything in your body.
Yes. One of the some of the other issues I've been reading about that affect infant mortality, low birth weight, congenital malformations, different maternal complications, SIDS, which is sudden infant death syndrome. Those are some of the top four that affect African Americans, according to the Office of Minority Health. In terms of low birth weight, what are some things that mothers can do, or families? Again, I don't want to just say the mothers, because, again, it takes two people to have a baby. But what are some things that women can do to try to alleviate this low birth weight issue?
There's a bunch of things that mothers can do to have healthy babies. More importantly, in a nutshell, is just to lead a healthy lifestyle. Eat a balanced diet, exercise, don't smoke, don't drink, or do it very minimally if you're addicted. You need to find an outlet for stress. And also, it's necessary to take 0.4 milligrams of folic acid a day, and that can be in multivitamin form or just a folic acid supplement. And
now, what if the mother is taking already a multivitamin? And I know some the people take vitamins especially for mothers. How do you know if you're taking enough? Do you just need to talk to your primary care?
Well, if for an unpregnant woman, if you have a balanced diet, you will be taking in, your body will naturally be taking in the nutrients, the vitamins and minerals and all the other things associated with it that are needed. That's in an unpregnant state. However, most people today don't have really healthy diets, so a multivitamin, especially for a young woman in her reproductive period, is highly important. But that is just enough to take care of her own body. Once she becomes pregnant, Stephanie?
You should be taking more folic acid. So if you're at risk for a neural tube defect, also, like if you have a history of that, you should be taking 400 micrograms of folic acid.
Okay. Now, when someone's getting pregnant, we're talking about, you know, maybe you don't know that you're going to get pregnant. Maybe you have an unexpected pregnancy. But for people who are planning to get pregnant, things should start beforehand. I mean, it could be 6 months, I understand. Maybe even a year before you decide to get pregnant, some things that you need to be doing. So, such as eating right or watching your alcohol intake. I mean, is that true, can you start 3 months before you're going to get pregnant? I mean, what is the recommendation in terms of when should you start preparing your body to get pregnant?
Well, actually, that's the whole point of our campaign. The point is preconception health, and preconception health is a woman's health before she becomes pregnant. So essentially that begins once a female is born. So you should be leading this healthy lifestyle no matter whether you plan on getting pregnant or not. But it's interesting, 50% of pregnancies are unplanned. So preconception health is all the more important, and that's why you should begin it as soon as possible.
Why don't you tell us a little bit, Stephanie, about the preconception peer education program and your involvement and what you see happening in the future with the program?
Well, I was sent to Howard University to become trained as a preconception peer educator, which basically means that I learned all about the importance of preconception health and how it affects infant mortality and a lot of things that women need to know about having a healthy baby. And I'm
what are some things that you learned that surprised you in your training?
Well, a lot of what I learned is the health disparity within and the fact that it's not all about poverty levels that lead to the high infant mortality rates. It's also the stress levels because studies have shown that educated African American women also have higher infant mortality rates than educated white women. So that was very surprising to me because I guess I came into the campaign thinking that it was a socioeconomic status thing.
Yes, yes. I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I'm a mother. I have a daughter. My daughter now is 15 years old. And I know that when I was pregnant, that is an issue, the stress. You know, you're going to work, you're taking care of, you know, your life in general, family members. And these are micro stresses, but as Dr. Science said, these are things that build up over time and over periods. And I think one of the very important issues is to mention again that it is not just based on your poverty economic state, even though that is a large determining factor, I'm sure, based on what I've been reading and the movie that Tanya Lee made. But I just want to repeat that again, that you can have money, have a good job, have a good level of education. And I think one of your professors, his wife was there at the movie screen. I mean, he was there and he was talking about his wife having a low birth weight child. So that's a very important issue. Go ahead, continue, talk about the program.
Well, what I was going to mention is that a college-educated black lawyer, female lawyer, has the same chance of having a low birth weight or preterm child than a white person, a white girl with a ninth grade education. It's equal in terms of the risk factor.
Yes.
And again,
yes.
There again, that has nothing to do with economics in that case.
Exactly. So, Stephanie, go ahead and continue. Tell us a little bit more. How would somebody become a preconception peer educator?
Well, I personally, I was made aware of it by Dr. Science because she's a faculty advisor for the Minorities in Nursing organization, which I'm a part of. But I came back to my campus and I executed my own preconception peer educator training. So I was able to train some of my fellow students here at Penn, and we plan on going back into the West Philly community to train another cohort of preconception peer educators sometime in January. So if anyone's interested, you can feel free to email me at choosesteph, C-H-U-S-T-E-P-H, at nursing.upenn.edu.
And how long would it take? Is it a couple of days, a couple of hours? What's the time commitment that they would need to make?
It would be just a two-day training, probably 4 hours on one Friday and 4 hours on one Saturday. And then you'll be certified as a preconception peer educator, and you can go out into your own communities and spread the word.
Okay, so that's not a lot of time. I mean, you're talking, you know, a couple of days but make a great impact. And once you get trained, you go out into community. Do you have to serve, you know, what, every weekend? Once you get trained, what's your level of commitment after that?
It's really up to you, actually. It's your own level of commitment is what you decide. But the whole point of the preconception peer educator training is that you're more likely to be receptive to people who are your own age, who look like you, and aren't like talking at you, but talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very grassroots campaign that is working on getting people to talk to each other on a one-on-one level and spread the word from there on.
Now, Dr. Science, I was mentioning earlier that I don't want to just focus on women, but what are some things that the father can do in terms of preparing their bodies and their minds and, of course, you know, keeping low stress? What are some things that the father can do in terms of his health that will help the baby and the development of the child?
Well, they also need to take care of their health and consider the fact that there is that potential if they're sexually active if they're sexually active at this point in time. They really need to be careful. They need to really learn about their own personal family histories, to get a better understanding of any risk factors that exist in their families. They should be aware of any potential sexually transmitted diseases that they have, because that's also another increased risk factor. They also need to eat right, be careful about their alcohol intake, not smoke, and also be careful about the work environments. For example, men who work with guys who work with chemicals or toxins need to be careful that they don't expose the women to them, and this includes things like fertilizers or pesticides, and to make sure that they're clean.
So a man who's working out in the field, and I say field, not necessarily literally the field, but it could be literally someone who's working in the field, but someone who's just working with those chemicals, the mother's not directly working, but you're saying if the husband or the partner comes home and is interacting with the mother, that affects the baby's health also?
Right. That can also, because remember now, it's a chemical. You don't see it. You may not even smell it in some cases, but it can still pass through body fluids. And so you have to be very careful, because when a pregnancy begins, the embryo is very sensitive to any external chemical in its in the environment that it's starting to develop in.
I think that's a really important issue, that these are things that you can't see, and they're still affecting the child's health. And you might think you washed your hands and you shook your toe out or something, but they can still affect the mother's health. So I think when the mother does go for prenatal care, that she speak possibly to her PCP or OBGYN about those issues.
Right. And substance abuse that may be, in any form, not just alcohol, but other types of substances also are increased risk factors that over time can produce changes in men's potential to procreate. And most guys in high school and college don't think about those things. But again, Stephanie talked about the importance of really planning preconceptually, because if you don't plan preconceptually, you are going to get pregnant, right? So.
Yeah, it's important.
Well, yeah, that means she's saying 50%. I mean, the pregnancies are unplanned, so. I think that says something to our society, that's just something maybe we haven't got to that point, or we've gotten away from it. I mean, we know that there's the issue of divorces and marriages breaking up and things of that nature. So, and when we talk about these statistics, I mean, are the most of the statistics focus on younger women who are unmarried, or do you find that these are also including married individuals?
It covers the breadth of both unmarried and married, and really at this point in time, the culture has a lot to do with, a number of unmarried males and females coming together.
Definitely.
They may or may not, they may have a natural unit or they may not have a natural unit, but the health of the father will impact overall the risk factors for the baby.
Now, what's the first time that a mother should go for her prenatal, what's her first prenatal visit? Is it the first month she finds out, the second month? The third month. What is your recommendation? When should they go to get their first prenatal checkup?
As soon as they've missed their first.
As soon as they realize that they've missed their first period, they should see a doctor, and then every month they should have a visit with their doctor, and then the last month it should be weekly.
So say that again. I just want people to understand that the first time you find out you've missed your cycle.
Right.
Yes. Then you should have a pregnancy test and see your doctor, and then you should have a prenatal visit every month up until the last month, when it should become a weekly visit.
So every month, and that's what one of the issues that that's affecting this this dilemma or this issue is that people are not going every month.
Exactly.
And they're waiting until maybe the third trimester to go get checked out.
This is very important to understand what your risk factors are in your family. And most kids today don't ask those questions, and parents are busy, so they don't volunteer that information. And they also don't want to volunteer the information, because they think by sharing it and having that kind of discussion with your children means that you're saying it's okay to get pregnant. But it's really a warning that these issues exist in the family.
And also, the population of low socioeconomic status might not be able to get to the doctor once a month. Maybe they don't have transportation to get there. Maybe they don't have access to pay for the doctor visit, so that makes it even more of an issue.
So that's a really big issue there, this whole issue of health care. I mean, the Obama administration is trying to push this new health care plan. And in your research, what is the most important thing? Are prenatal visits the most important thing? Stress? I mean, go ahead.
Well, the most important thing that actually the government can help to provide is access to prenatal care. And when we talk about some of these situations in some of the urban areas and even rural areas, there are some areas in our United States that are similar to third world countries, but they're right here in the United States. The fact that we are 12th in terms of infant mortality in the world, or we're 29th in terms of infant mortality in the world, given the fact that we have developed and are able to produce the best healthcare in the world, is really a 21st century disgrace.
Well, that's what the movie, when I was watching, it's just very saddening, because I was fortunate. I had health care, and I was able to go see my doctor. I had a wonderful doctor, and, you know, my daughter was born healthy, and all her fingers and toes and all those things. But it really is scary that, like you said, here in the United States, we're one of the richest countries in the world, and there are people living in third world conditions. These are people in states that you know of that you might have visited and didn't realize that in that neighborhood, this is what's going on. We have about 7 minutes left. I wanted to read an article I just found actually this past week. It was in the New York Times, the November 26th issue. It says, trying to explain a drop in infant mortality. This is from Madison, Wisconsin. 7.5 months into Tashai Pendleton's first pregnancy, her child was stillborn. And then in early 2008, she bore a daughter prematurely. Soon after, Ms. Pendleton moved from a community in Racine that was thick with poverty to a better neighborhood in Madison. Here, for the first time, she had a full-term pregnancy. As she cradled her two-month-old daughter recently, she described the fear and isolation she had experienced during her first two pregnancies, and the more embracing help she found 100 miles away in her third. In Madison County, nurses make frequent home visits, and she got more help from her church. The lives and pregnancies of black mothers like Ms. Pendleton, 21 years old, are now the subject of intense study as researchers confront one of the country's most intractable health problems, the large racial gap in infant deaths, primarily due to higher incidence among blacks of very premature births. The interesting thing, the article goes on, is that there was a drop, and one of the things they focused on was the level of support, not just from the doctor or access, but from the community. And in your research, have you seen that that might help, maybe support from family and from communities, churches?
Absolutely. It really does take a village. It takes access to health care providers, and there's a range of health care providers that are equally good, starting with family practice physicians, family practice nurses, midwives, obstetricians. And family medicine. I mean, there's a whole range of practitioners, but the access needs to be provided, and not only the access, but people in the community need to tell each other what is available in terms of being able to access this kind of care. The other thing is, not only peer education as have been developed by the Office of Minority Health, but peer support, mother to mother, father to father, also needs to continue to occur. And then also working closely with the religious support groups, whatever religious affiliations is another form of providing additional care that could also provide stress releases for the parents during a given pregnancy, along with mother. Just having the possibility of a first-term mother being in contact with a mother who has successfully had other children already to be able to ask if she's not around her own particular mother. For whatever reason.
Well, that's interesting that you say that is so important, and I do believe myself, even after you have a child, support is important. But you mentioned earlier how parents are fearful of discussing with their children the issue of pregnancy, of prenatal care, preconception issues, because they think, well, then my child's going to go out and have a baby. But the reality is there are children having babies, and I think that if there are churches that are also, they're in that same mindset sometimes, that they're afraid or they shun these young women who may be not married and are having kids, and they get shunned by their communities as like, you did something wrong, or you're bad, or why didn't you wait till you get married, and all these, you know, negative things, as opposed to, well, you know what, there's a life here now, there's another life here, maybe the person did make a mistake, whatever the case is, but trying to support them. And that's something I think that could be changed, especially in the African American community. You know, we're having, you know, babies left and right, and people need support when they're in that situation, and especially if they're young, if they're like, you know, 16 years old or something like that, or even if you're 24 years old, you're still young. If it's the first child you ever had, you still need support, you know. So now, Stephanie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say preconceptual care actually starts very early on, before even changes occur in a young girl's body, to start really educating her in terms of what is happening and what could possibly be happening. And this is definitely a women's health issue, very much, because of so many historically negative projections that are still made and judgments made on a population that sometimes things can't be helped. And to ostracize them isn't going to help either. Stephanie?
Yes, Stephanie, I just wanted you to mention again the email address that people can send a request to you to get more information about the preconception peer program. If you could just state your email again.
Sure. It's chustephph, chustephph, at nursing.upenn.edu.
And also I want to mention that if you want to get more information from about the Office of Minority Health campaign, you can go to minorityhealth.hhs.gov, and you can see the program there, A Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign. Again, that's A Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign. And also you can learn more about Tanya Lee's movie, A Crisis in the Crib, and other things going around. This is a nationwide campaign. It's not just in the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area, even though this is where Stephanie and Dr. Science are located. But this is a national campaign by this Office of Minority Health. And I'm sure there are many other programs going on around the country. And if your church or your community organization or a recreation center does not have a program, you might want to think about starting a program there. Because, again, when someone gets pregnant, and as the statistics stated, we talked about 50% of pregnancies are unplanned, people need that support. And women, you need to reach out to another young woman. Instead of shunning her, just hold your hand out and try to pull her along, because she doesn't know what she's doing or where she's going, because she's never been there before. So I think that's really important. And also, before young women even get to the point where you think, and I put that in quotes, they're having sex, you need to discuss with them about their body issues, about pregnancy, about sex. Don't be afraid. I personally don't believe that talking to a child about their sexual body parts, reproductive body parts, is going to make them have sex. I think it will empower them, if anything, not to have sex or not to go out and do different risky behaviors. I want to thank both of you this evening for coming and calling in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and please email us so that we, in January, we can, and we invite everybody to work with us on our next preconceptual peer education training.
Yes, and again, this is Dr. Science and Stephanie Chu from the University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, and they're working with the A Healthy Baby Begins With You campaign through the Office of Minority Health, and they have a training that's going to be coming up in January. And if for some reason you did not hear the email, I will post it to my website, the email address, Stephanie's email address, and also the Minority Health's webpage. Again, thank you so much. And everyone else, thank you for listening to the show this evening. I will have a show Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern discussing the issue of adoption. So if you're interested in adopting a child, or you might have thought about it, or you know someone who's in the process, tune in on Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. The call-in number is 646-929-0368. And again, thank you very much for joining the call and listening this evening. Everyone have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen to your baby. Do you know what he's saying? He's saying thank you for taking good care of him before he got here. Women who lead healthy lifestyles, eat well, monitor their health, and get prenatal care better their odds against infant mortality. Call 1-800-444-6444. 1-800-332-7472 and learn what you can do to ensure your baby's health. Your baby will thank you. This is Tanya Lewis-Lee, author and producer, asking you to step up to help end infant mortality. A healthy baby begins with you.